Welcome back to Sit Still, Look Opinionated, the podcast. I'm your host, Claire Malky. How's everyone's week been? Yeah, I know that question is more loaded than an NYPD's handgun, but in times like these, niceties are a comforting formality, at least for me anyway. Really though, how are you processing these events? Are you doing anything to better yourself or your community? Are you taking to the streets with signs and using your physical voice? Or are you dedicating this time to educating yourself via books, documentaries, and lectures? Here at the Sit Still Studio, we're doing a little bit of everything, but we're far from finished. Come to think of it, I don't think finished will ever apply. We've got another great episode in store for you all. We'll be learning all about protests and why they're so unapologetically American. Then we'll jab at this week's headlines, and then we'll close out the show with a conversation I had with actor, comedian, and organizer with BYP 100, Chicago chapter, Max Thomas. We'll hear about his account of the Chicago protests, as well as other stories from his life. I thought tequila could solve all the problems, but this week it was time to lock up the liquor cabinet and unlock something a little more sobering. So let's jump in. Today we're going to talk about protests and your right to protest. Obviously a topical subject, as protests have occupied US streets for the last 3 weeks. But as always, people like to spread fear and misinformation at things like protests to further their own agenda. So we thought we'd take a stab at the topic so that we could better formulate our own opinions. And remember, if we say something that you're not sure about, we always encourage you to do your own research. Knowledge is power, but so are batteries. And don't forget that. In honor of how I started every high school paper, let's start with the definition of a protest. A protest is a statement or action expressing disapproval or objection to something. For example, the protests happening now are people taking actions to express their disapproval or objection to police violence against Black people. Or the protests a couple weeks ago were people taking actions to express their disapproval or objections to staying inside instead of fighting a virus with their guns. Despite the fact that a virus is impervious to bullets, it is still something people have a right to protest. Why? Well, simply put, it's part of the First Amendment. And we all know what the First Amendment is. If you've ever watched a video of a Karen screaming at a manager for something, you've probably heard them say the phrase, "I have the right to free speech." Well, yes and no. The First Amendment states, "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances." Before we get ahead of ourselves, I understand that definition is a little confusing because it's basically written in Shakespeare talk. But don't worry, I'll put it into layman's terms. So, let's break it down. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. Basically, what that means is that the government will not hold or promote one religion over other religions, nor will it restrict an individual's right to their own religious practice. Essentially, it's the idea of the separation of church and state. Although, fun fact, nowhere in the Constitution or its amendments is the phrase separation of church and state ever written. The phrase actually comes from other writings of Thomas Jefferson, who I guess was just speaking off the cuff. Then, there's the right to the freedom of speech and the right to a free press. This gives individuals the right to express themselves without government interference. You have to remember that the reason this was the First Amendment is because King George tried to shut down anyone who openly spoke up against the crown. Also, this is why people who yell at businesses about their right to free speech sound stupid. They have a right to free speech against the government, but you must obey the rules of any private establishment that you choose to conduct business at. And if you don't, they have a right to kick you out or shut you down. While you may have the right to freedom of speech against the government, that freedom is still limited, as there are unprotected aspects of speech against the government. Those aspects are as follows: advocacy of illegal actions, fighting words, commercial speech, and obscenity. Yes, that's right. Obscenity is one of the listed unprotections. According to Cornell's legal site, obscenity is concerned with lewd, filthy, or disgusting words or pictures, which is stupid broad. But apparently each state has different laws on addressing how obscenity is handled. So check your state's legislation for more specific details. And then, of course, there is the right for peaceful assembly and petition against the government, which, well, is the right to peacefully assemble and petition against the government. It was the Founding Fathers' way of allowing groups of individuals to express their grievances with the government. Protests are the accumulation of all of this, a large group of people getting together to express their grievances with the government. Now that you understand the First Amendment and what a protest is, let's talk about why they're an integral part of American history. Now, if I were to break down the who's, what's, and where's of the most defining historical protests, we'd have a whole different podcast series. I mean, I would be down to do a spinoff show, but I think Mike would probably tell me not to bite off more than I can chew. And that's why he's the producer. But with that in mind, an exceeding number of events in the standard textbook version of American history are, in fact, protests. You want a prime example? How about the American Revolution? Or as my British theater professor would always call it, the American independence from England. The Founding Fathers created this nation we call the United States on the sheer idea that a people could overthrow a social and political construct in favor of an alternative system. I literally just mentioned how the First Amendment was all about rebuking King George. But let's be real. Those Founding Fathers who we discuss so much on this show weren't as pristine as we imagine them to be. Remember, they were all slave owners. And although the words they wrote sound eloquent, they were really only writing those words for each other, i.e. wealthy, educated, white men. Despite that fact, because of this First Amendment, the actions of those who dissent against the government are legal, which confuses me so much in times like these. Because if it's legal to peacefully assemble to petition the government, why did Number 45 use tear gas and rubber bullets to disperse peaceful protesters at Lafayette Square to go take a picture in front of a church, for that matter? Maybe the separation of church and state really should have been in the Constitution. So if protests are legal and important, what can they accomplish? Well, they're a major heads up that the government, and most likely all of American society, needs to get its act together. They shake up the status quo. They make you pay attention to an oppressed group's issues. And ultimately, protests can lead to constructive and justified change. Just based off these last 2 weeks of protesting, the cops involved in George Floyd's murder were charged. Minneapolis has committed to dismantling the police, and Confederate statues were taken down across the country. These are just a few steps taken after 2 weeks of protesting, and yet there is so much more to be done. Now, like we mentioned at the top of the show, all protests are legal, including those ones about haircuts. But let's not get carried away. The Black Lives Matter protests have a wildly different meaning than the Michigan courthouse protests. Just take a look at pictures from both marches. Notice anything different? Especially when it comes to, the actions of the police? But like Aaron and Harrison mentioned last week, there's not one right way to protest. And on top of that, you cannot tell someone else how to protest. This is an especially a big no if you benefit from the world of the oppressor. Think of it this way. You wouldn't tell someone how to grieve the loss of their grandmother. It's a personal journey. Same thing applies with protests. For some, going to the marches out in the street could be anxiety-inducing. Or maybe they have an autoimmune disease and being in a large group could up their chances of contracting COVID-19. And for others, going out to large protests is their only way to use their voice. Tomato, tomato. Or as Mike likes to say, tomato, tomato. There's some joke there that I don't really know. If you're going out into the street, first off, thank you. But secondly, make sure you stay safe from both the police and COVID-19. Still wear your mask and gloves at the protests, and if you're able to, go get tested for COVID-19 or self-quarantine after you protest. If you want a more in-depth look at what to bring and how to prepare for a protest, check out the links in the show notes. They'll guide you on the ins and outs of what to expect. Also, check out AOC's Instagram. She's always posting great guidelines, and also she just rocks. To quote my good friend, Lin-Manuel Miranda, "This is not a moment, it's a movement. Protests matter because they're at the core of the American identity. And they can lead to momentous change. They shake up everyday life and make us pay attention. Protesting against the government is one of your First Amendment rights. So if someone tries to say the protests happening now are un-American, they're missing the whole reason America exists." And BT Dubs, if you think I'm actually friends with Lynn, thank you for thinking I'm way cooler than I actually am. Up next, this week's headlines. In comedy news, Andrew Alexander released a statement this week that he will be stepping down from his roles as owner and CEO of The Second City. Over the years, Alexander has been accused, rightfully so, of a slew of racist acts. And as a former employee, all I gotta say is, yes, and it's about damn time. The Second City wasn't the only corporation to have bigwigs step down. This week, food magazine Bon Appetit and online women media site Refinery29 both ousted their leaders as well. Looks like these editors-in-chief will now be known as racist in grief. J.K. Rowling, the author of the famous Harry Potter series, yet again said some transphobic shit on Twitter. In response to this, my sources revealed to me that Potterheads are developing a new spell called Urius Cancelus. This powerful incantation translates to, "You're canceled." This week, racists on Twitter were successfully trolled when international music fans flooded racist hashtags with K-pop memes and videos. In light of this event, BTS fans doubled down and said, "It's on, bigots." By the way, if you don't know who BTS is, they're a K-pop band and you should definitely check them out. On Monday, House Democrats introduced a new bill called the Justice in Policing Act. This bill would forbid police from using chokeholds. The bill is predicted not to pass in the Senate because Republicans fear that they would have to stop using the chokehold on bills passed in the House. And that's this week's headlines. Up next, my conversation with actor, comedian, and organizer with BYP 100, Chicago chapter, Max Thomas. So today on the show, we have Max Thomas. He is an actor and comedian and also an organizer with BYP 100 Chicago. And I'm super excited to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. This is awesome.
Yeah. If you want to introduce yourself and talk about yourself a little bit, that would be great.
Yes. Let me see. I started organizing probably about 2017. That was the same exact summer that BYP 100, Black Youth Project 100, started Freedom Square, which was over in Holman Square. And that was the shine light on the fact that police were taking Black and Latino people over there for many decades and torturing them. It was labeled as a blackout site by the police, where they can literally detain you, take you there, torture you, just like something that you would see out of like a Law and Order or like Chicago PD or something like that. Like, even if like in Chicago PD, I remember in the first few seasons, they had like this cage that sometimes the cops would take people they would detain to. And just like that is just like this blackout site. But I mean, even worse, like wild things that we learned from that. Thousands of people throughout Chicago came out and said, yes, I've been to that site.
Oh my goodness.
I've been abused by the police at that site. So that was the first time that I learned about BYP 100, because they set up this Freedom Square where they took care of homeless people, they took care of kids in the community. They shine light not only on this place that police were torturing people, but they also created a free library, a free store there. It was throughout that summer of 2017, it was a consistent thing. It was a consistent living protest. So that's the reason why I signed on to BYP 100. My organizing work started from being a kid. When I went Halloween, like from probably about 6 to 9, I went as a protester, like as a 1960s hippie protester with a fro and like beads and everything and tie dye shirt. And I was like fighting for equal housing rights and stuff like that. And yeah, that's like where my first organizing, I guess, where my heart connected to organizing work.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool that as a kid you were going as that for Halloween. You know, I feel like when I was a kid,
yeah,
I went as like, I don't know, like the Flintstones or something.
Yes. That's a great costume though too. That's a deep cut for kids.
Yeah. My dog growing up was actually named Pebbles, so holds a sweet place in my heart.
Wow.
But I didn't even know about that place in Chicago that you were talking about.
Sure.
Like that sounds like something out of a show or not even real. Oh. That is heartbreaking just to learn about. And I was doing a little bit of BYP 100 research on BYP 100 before we started, but that's really a crazy thing. So that's
yes.
been, that organization's been around since 2013, you said? So have you been working with them since 2013?
No, since 2017.
Oh, 2017.
I've been working with them, yes.
Mm-hmm. So with everything that's been going on, I saw on Facebook that you were downtown a lot. What was the feeling like downtown? What was from, you know, last Friday till today? I feel like it's been a year since that's since that happened.
The protests on, so the protests I went to on Saturday was, let me first say, in the beginning or throughout the protest, it was amazing. It really was. One huge thing that I thought was different this time is that with all protests, with all of these, like any of these big protests that are known to the city, to city officials, you know, of course you'll have police out there. They'll be stopping traffic, directing traffic, redirecting traffic, I should say. And Lori Lightfoot, you know, put out a statement to the Chicago police. She was like, do not abuse anybody. Do not intimidate anyone. None of that. And for majority of the protests, I did not see a lot of cops, other than the cops that are like directing traffic, things like that. I didn't see a lot of police. And I was excited about that. I was very pleased by that. So we marched everywhere. I mean, we marched from Dearborn and Jackson all the way to Chicago and Lakeshore, and then turned left and went down Michigan and went back up going south. So now we're on, like, let's say we're on Magnificent Mile near Cheesecake Factory, near Water Tower Place, and we're heading south up Michigan Avenue. Everything's fine. We're cheering, we're chanting and stuff. It's a beautiful day. It was gorgeous on Saturday. We, right before that, we had sat down on Lakeshore Drive. Like, it was mind-blowing to me to sit actually on Lakeshore Drive and chant together and talk to just everybody that was out there. It was incredible, because cars were even stopping, taking their kids out the car, sitting on the car, watching the protesters. Like, it was fantastic. It was everything that you would have wanted in ways, except for the fact that a big part of, big thing with this protest that was different than a lot of protests that are well organized is that this one was not well organized. This one was a lot of, you know, similar belief people saying, hey, let's we're going to be here at this time. That's all I know. And we're going to move, and we're going to show in numbers our solidarity. Usually at big protests like that, there's like a marsh, there's like many marshals, and marshals are people that help where they say, hey, they tell traffic, hey, we're protesters, we're coming through, this is what we're protesting, can you please give us some space? That they'll also be there to help with, like, if somebody passes out, to make sure that somebody gets taken care of. They sometimes can have little snacks on them and stuff like that. And they're also there to direct chants and to help keep people's spirits up throughout the protest. For this one, there was only like a few marshals, maybe two, and a few people speaking. And they even had this open mic portion where people could come up, speak, you know, speak their truth, express poetry. It was very, very, very beautiful and inclusive. But by the time we got up to the Wrigley Building, which is now we're at like the Michigan Bridge going over Chicago River, they pulled up the bridge before we got there. They put up the bridge, and not only that, but they put up all of the bridges, so we couldn't go south. We couldn't continue going back downtown where we started over on Dearborn and Jackson. And from there, we're chanting, we're all in solidarity. Then out of nowhere, I see the police storming us. Like, I see the police just like charging after us in their riot gear. And I'll tell you something that was mind blowing, Claire, was to watch cops, anxious cops, like very, very nervous cops that you could tell never been through any of this kind of thing before, go like walking up to us like, okay, put down the shield. And then you see them go through all of this, put down their shield, and then charge right at you. Like seeing a wild beast or something. And then they pulled out their, all of them pulled out their batons and started pushing the crowd with their batons. And then people are chanting. There's some people that started throwing stuff. And then that really got the cops going. And then the cops started beating people up. I saw a man right in front of me get like pummeled by like 20 to 30 police officers. It was crazy. And the police even created a circle around the man who was being abused so that nobody could see. It was horrific. It was horrific. And then they detained this man, and I made sure that I videotaped the entire interaction, and we're still looking for this person. Like, there's hundreds of protesters throughout the city that are still in jail. And it's horrible. It's like, there are so many peaceful protesters. The only other people that were not, that were disruptive, were that there were certain young white protesters that felt so just, I don't know, just felt like they just wanted to focus on anarchy. So they were busting windows. And that was something that throughout the protest we had, we didn't allow that to slow down the momentum of the solidarity that was shared with everybody out there. It was wild because there would be a, let's say a young white protester will smash a window, and then you'll see a black or brown person run up to that person and say, ah, it's okay, it's okay. No. Come on, we're not here for that. We're here to show our solidarity. We're not here to smash windows. And it really redirected the protest. And it was wild because soon enough, a cop car was on fire. Soon enough, a lot of people were looting. And it got to a place where it was like the momentum of protest shifted to this place where everybody was trying to escape. All of the train lines were down. They stopped the trains. It was horrible. It really was militaristic and set up for the police to come in and basically target us, basically circle us and say, I'm about to detain everybody out here. It was horrific. It truly was horrific. And to be in the middle of it, like I've never seen 50 plus squad cars. I'm talking about huge Tahoe squad cars on fire, busted up. And I mean, for me, I was excited to see it, but at the same time, I was also like, wow, if this is happening right now, I know that we have to be ready, 100% ready for the blowback that is going to happen from the police department. Mm-hmm. So it was truly wild to see.
Mm-hmm. I've never even seen Chicago with the bridges up and just seeing images, and I just didn't really understand like why that was the tactic that was used. I'm not asking you to answer that question, but that's just something that I don't really understand. Like, why would you keep people in this like hostage like situation? I just don't really understand how that could be productive in any sense of anything.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Have you noticed a shift just in the last few days with other people responding to protests and other people engaging with this movement, if that makes sense?
Well, yes. One mm-hmm. thing that I'm seeing that I'm thankful for is that I am seeing more black and brown unity. And what I mean by that is like there's sometimes, this is a known thing here in Chicago of the segregation that's in the city. Mm-hmm. So you have like Latinx areas where there have been certain small groups of people who have taken it upon themselves and said, if you're black and you're coming into our area, we are going to beat you up. We are going to assault you. And it's disgusting because then that created a kind of, that created a cloud over the Latinx community. And the thing that I love is that Latinx people in these communities of Chicago, of like the little village of Pilsen, of Cicero, that they've come together and they said, hey, we understand that we do have our own internal racism, our own internal caste system, but we are going to make sure that we fix that. And right now, we're going to stand in solidarity with you in terms of the commonality that we all share, is that we need to defund the police department. There's too many millions of dollars that are going to the police department every single year for them to continue to abuse everybody, abuse our kids, abuse adults, to be in our schools the way that they are. I mean, for myself, I went through CPS and I, throughout high school, there was always police officers in my school, metal detector. When I was in elementary school, I had to go through a metal detector and there was always a security guard at my school. What does that say to black and brown kids that are going to these schools? If you go outside and a cop is targeting you and is watching you all the time, that then you're thinking to yourself, okay, if I'm getting that out here in the world and I don't feel safe then, and then I see a cop at my school, where do I feel safe? Why would I want to be at school when if me and another classmate get into an argument, that then a police officer has to be there to pull me out of class? How scary would that be for a 15-year-old, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you have experiences like that in high school or in middle school?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. Definitely. I saw in high school, I remember seeing that, like, so for instance, on every floor, I think we had about 3 floors in my high school and they were large. The whole school wrapped around in like a huge rectangle. So within that rectangle, there would be little like skyways to go to another section of the school. And every, like, how could I say, like every hallway, there was at least one to two security guards. So a fight broke out, like literally like a regular high school fight of somebody grabbing each other and they're pushing each other up against the lockers. The police were called. And then it wouldn't only be the police that were in school, but it would be police like from a precinct nearby driving their Tahoes onto campus to get into the school to come and do whatever. But it was horrible to see that. Because so many kids were dealing with where they're walking to school every single day and they're being targeted, they're being looked at, they're being stopped by the police and harassed and asked, where are you going, and take everything out of your pockets and stuff. I've experienced so many times where police officers have pulled me over for no reason. And even if I show them my college ID, like when I was at school at UIC, even if I showed them my college ID, a lot of times they still would be, forget that. I don't care about that, you know? Like, and it's not anything about you needing to be educated or anything like that, but every Black person knows if you're near your college, you will use, here's my college ID. I'm just going back to my dorm. You know, I'm walking to my dorm. I'm not outside. I'm literally right now, I'm just outside for the purpose of going home. That's it. You know? And it's always been horrifying. I've been pulled over times where I picked up a woman that I was seeing at the time, and then being pulled over and the cops saying, oh, I pulled you over for soliciting prostitutes. Now, what does that say to me? And what does that say to the woman that is in the car? That is horrible. That is harassment right there. Why? That is disgusting. There's no proof of that. There's nothing. It's those kind of things happen. Those blatant things happen in our communities all the time. There's many times where police will come and they will just pull down your pants. Especially if you're like a Black man, they'll pull down your pants and then search you right there on the street because they expect you of selling drugs. They expect you of doing something. I remember I was even in New York for Shakespeare Sonnet Slam and it was raining. I had my raincoat on and I had my earbuds in and I was talking to my girlfriend, talking to my partner, Asia, and I had my phone in my pocket and I'm like this, trying to keep away from the rain, talking to her. And the cops come up behind me and say, get off the phone. And I say, what? And he said, get off the phone. And then literally they do like this double take. They're like, oh, I'm sorry. And they actually admit, I thought you were bagging up drugs over here. I apologize, you know, but while I'm here, let me still check your ID. Let me still see what you're doing at here at this public park, standing here talking to your girlfriend in the rain. It was just incidents like that forever. First time I'd ever had an experience with the police was when I was 6 years old. I was at a 7-Eleven with my dad and I was looking at like the donut case and this cop said, look at this little nigger about to steal donuts. And I was like, I was just blown away, 6 years old. And I told my dad and my dad dealt with it right then and there with the police. But I mean, that was something that was just, it's been ingrained in me.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel any of those memories coming up to the surface when you were seeing everything happening downtown?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's the same because I think to myself about how I always hate when people say, hey, there's good cops, there's good police officers. If there's good cops out there, these cops would be advocating to fire the cops for killing, abusing Black lives every single day. Mm-hmm. That's what you would be doing. Your focus would be on that. You know what I mean? You'd hardly have any time for police work because your whole day would be filled with you trying to become like basically like a vigilante against police hate crimes, you know, against hate crimes onto the community. Like it's horrible to me whenever I hear that there's good police officers, because what I saw downtown and what many are seeing throughout the country, I don't know if you saw it earlier today, Claire, about how the 75-year-old white man who, I think he was in D.C., and he got pushed by the cops, and he begins bleeding. And then the way the cops immediately start arresting somebody else.
Yeah. I didn't even mean to watch that video, but it just played, like, on my feed immediately. And I mean, that's one of many, but just an elderly gentleman, you know? And then he was bleeding from his head. It was very, I mean, they're all disturbing. They're all disturbing in their own ways, but... That one was, yeah, that's, it was terrible. It was really terrible to see that. And you know, that happens. Those are all these videos are shared, and I feel very conflicted about it, 'cause it's, I don't think it's good to see that, but at the same time, it's really wakes me up and says, oh my God.
Yes.
And they just walked right by him. They just, you know, let him bleed. And that's all of these people. That's why everyone is out in the streets right now.
Yes.
Yeah. Throughout all of this, is there any hope? Is there anything that uplifts you and keeps you going through all of this?
Oh, absolutely. Like the fact that in all the states throughout this country, we're seeing protests. Many cities, many other countries, on other continents, we're seeing these protests. It is not just because of George Floyd, but it's George Floyd is like the boiling point. You know, it just like Malcolm X said, the chickens have come home to roost. And it is as horrifying as these killings have been. I think that it's so fascinating to me to see how this one specific one, where we're locked in on a video of a man being brutally killed, I mean, slowly being killed for 8 minutes. And there's no, you know, of course, NRA, of course, like the fraternal order of police that are, whatchamacallit, union or whatever, in Minneapolis, of course, they will say, oh, he was a violent criminal and all of that. Horrible. Totally wrong, totally false. But the thing that's with this is just backtracking is kind of like with Mike Brown. When Mike Brown was killed by a police officer in Ferguson, people could go back and say, oh, well, Mike Brown was stealing this, which, of course, I, again, say, this is a kid. The kid had no money. The kid is struggling just like everybody else is in Ferguson, Missouri. He had no reason to die. He had no reason to die. And with this, it's so interesting how it takes something like this where nobody can pull out any denial of his innocence. You know what I'm saying? It's so interesting how this is something that literally spearheaded murals in Syria. I think there's a mural of George Floyd in Nairobi. Like he's Tupac. Like it's fascinating. It's really amazing to me to see so many people come together. And I believe that America is in the hot seat, like we have been in a huge way, especially through this presidency, which I think is great, because I love the fact that puts pressure on people like this horrible president that we have right now. But the biggest thing that I love that's a takeaway from this that gives me hope is that Black and Brown people are coming together, that you're seeing people out there that are fully, fully understanding and loving on each other in the way of saying, hey, me and my people are dealing with police brutality as well. Instead of saying, oh, you know, in society standards, I'm closer to whiteness, so I'm not going to accept the fact that I should align with what you believe in terms of defunding the police because that man was Black. No, I'm loving the fact that you're seeing all ethnicities, people seeing themselves in George Floyd. That is really incredible. And that's what a huge part of the Black Lives Matter movement is the fact that it is shining light on the fact that we are always looked at as our lives are not important. Nobody who ever is chanting Black Lives Matter is not saying that a white kid being shot and killed by a police officer is not important, or a white kid dying of cancer or whatever is not important. We're never saying that. We're just saying, hey, we're here too. And you've lived in this country where we built it. And then you don't want to acknowledge that we built it. You don't want to acknowledge slavery. You don't want to acknowledge that we deserve reparations for us building this country. So yes, that is us showing up and saying we are here and we're here to stay.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's why I'm really happy to have this platform where I can share your story and other stories, because that's what we all need. We all need to say, hey, like what you learned in history class. And I'm from Virginia and I went through public schools and elementary school in Virginia. And like so many of this stuff just washed over, you know, we still have highways named for, you know, Confederate people. And it's exactly. really like, and then I went to a smaller Christian high school, and there were some people whose families are connected to Confederate lineages, and it's real. And I always kind of put it away. And now I'm really having to say, like, oh my gosh, like this is a bigger system, and this goes back hundreds of years. And
yes,
it's definitely been a relearning process. So thank you so much for sharing your stories and everything. Do you have any social media or anything that you want yes. our listening community to notice or keep on the lookout for?
Mm-hmm. Yes, please find me at Searching for Max. That's it. Searching for Max on Instagram, Twitter, mm-hmm. Facebook, Max Thomas. And also, I would love to let everybody know, read the 1619 Project. Mm-hmm. Look that up and read about that. It's incredible. But yes, check out 1619 Project and donate to Asada's Daughters, Black Lives Matter Nationwide, Black Youth Project 100, BYP 100, Kenwood Oakland Community Organization here in Chicago. And there's many food drives that are going on throughout the city. Create your own. That's one thing you could do. If you feel like, hey, I don't want to risk getting COVID. I have asthma. I can't chant. I can't go out the streets. Create a food drive because there's so many people on the South and West Side that have no grocery stores and need food right now. So that's something that you could easily do, is deliver, collect food at your own house, collect food at a business that you own, and then deliver that food to the proper organizations on the South and West Side, or even door knock and deliver them to people. Mm-hmm.
I did see you in Preach one time, which is a show yes. That is here in Chicago. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, Preach is a collective of hybrid artists, nannies, doulas, teachers, spoken word artists, stand-up comedians, actors, everything, vibe dealers. We're dope. We're cool. We're spoken word improv troupe, and we love uplifting people, and we're just bringing love and communal inclusive energy to everywhere we go. Right now, we have a show coming up on Juneteenth, on June 19th. That's 2 weeks from tomorrow, I believe. But it's Preach, Boston and Bonnets. We have a show called Pass the Plate that's coming for Juneteenth. And Juneteenth, we're celebrating celebrating Black people's freedom from slavery. So come out and celebrate with us from your home.
Great. I'll be sure to share that with our community, and I will definitely be checking in as well.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, Max. Show. If you have any questions or comments about today's episode, you can email us at sitstilllookopinionated@gmail.com. And make sure to follow us on Instagram at @sitstill_lookopinionated. And now on Twitter at @sitstillpodcast. And make sure to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. This podcast was produced by Michael Dritto and written by myself, Claire Malky, and Michael Dritto. Theme music by Terrence Jackson. Transition music by Christina Walter. And of course, I'm your host, Claire Malky. See you next week. We're still looking at current events for our next episode, so make sure you come back next Friday. Have a safe week and go get tested if you can. Bye!